Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. Coming up, Bees, Blackburn, Bleakness, available for free wherever you get your podcasts. And ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. And we're back with the first of our bi-weekly chats about Chelsea. It was all going so well, wasn't it? But then Brentford rocked up and did what Brentford do. We're going to talk about that. We're going to look ahead to the Blackburn game as well. I am joined today by two of the Athletic's finest. Mr. Consistent, Luke Bosch, is back with us, of course. First name on the team sheet these days, Luke. How are you doing?
Yeah, all good, Matt. All good. Surprisingly chipper, I think, after, as you said, a bleak weekend from a blue perspective.
All right, we'll try and find some positives. Simon Johnson, that's your natural game, so you'll be bringing the good vibes to this, right?
I'm back to tell it as it is. It's another this positive chat on the podcast. It's been far too upbeat. I'm back to bring it back down to the level it belongs, in the gutter.
All right. Well, Chelsea hosted Brentford on Saturday. You know what that means.
Good movement here from Mbeumo. He's stood up a really good cross and they've got in front. Pinnock up from the back. And Brentford lead in this West London derby. The goalkeeper's stranded here, trying to get back. And Mbeumo seals it. That'll do it.
Very disappointed because I think the way that we concede the ball, we should not concede. And after, it was really tough to break down the block that during the 90 minutes they play really, really, you know, low.
Joe has been on to say, I'm expecting a Simon masterclass in misery.
Sounds like the guy I met in the pub after the game on Saturday. So I'm starting off with an anecdote. Here you go. And yes, the South Africa-New Zealand Rugby World Cup final was going on. I actually had my back to the screen. It was quite funny. So I was looking out at everyone watching the screen I did actually at one moment joke they're all there to see me, but probably not. Anyway, this this chap, I won't name him just in case he's listening, but he comes over, he's an American, and he goes, Simon, I've got to talk to you about this. He goes, why are you so negative? And we ended up having a very good conversation where I explained perhaps some of my messaging comes from my sense of humour. But no, I sort of defended myself for my negative. I like to think it is wisdom of watching Chelsea for so long. You get to read the patterns of what's happening. And hence why I was so downbeat after the Arsenal game, because I could sense how much of a missed opportunity that was. And that as a result of that result, it had negative connotations that rolled into the Brentford game. I'll leave it at that. But anyway, yes, I'm back with my upbeat nature.
All right. We put the call out as ever for tweets / posts on X. Lucy continuing to be absolutely phenomenal in terms of a gift game with that. At least that's something that we can cling on to. Here's Peter, who says, there seems to be a pattern where we turn up for big games and go missing against smaller opposition. Is it a mentality thing, or can we just not play against a low block? Darren, on a similar theme, low block bullied. How do we find that goal to overcome teams willing to sit back? Luke, is it too simplistic to say that if that Noni Madueke effort in the first half goes in rather than thuds against the bar, then it's a much easier day and Chelsea go on to win comfortably?
No, I think that is, there's definitely something in that, Matt. It's one of those where Brentford's first goal came out of, you know, seemingly nothing, a bit of a hopeful loft to the back post from Brian and Mbeumo. And up to that point in the first half, well, you know, throughout the first half, really, Chelsea had played very positively. They were finding space in between Brentford's midfield and defence. You know, Madueke was getting in some space. Cole Palmer was running the show. And I think, yeah, as half-time came at a bit of a poor time for Chelsea, because I think Brentford were able to shore up a lot in the second half, even before their goal. And with regards to those tweets, I think it's a combination of both mentality and, you know, struggling to play against a low block, which is, you know, when you have a young team, as Chelsea do, both of those things are going to be a factor, because on one hand, you simply have to learn how to play against a low block. You have to develop that through playing games. And, you know, players like Noni Madueke, Cole Palmer, Nicholas Jackson will develop that part of their game as they get older and more experienced. And in terms of mentality, you know, you see it from the best teams. You see it from Manchester City all the time, when maybe the first 45 minutes doesn't go their way. Maybe they even concede, but they back themselves to come back and create chances, even if the opposition go even deeper. You know, we saw it from Arsenal when they played Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. You know, and you have to say they are one of the best teams right now. You know, you never felt that Arsenal gave up in that game. And I'm not saying Chelsea gave up, but I think as soon as Brentford scored, there was just a little bit more panic in how Chelsea played. And there's, and you know, I mean, even if you play 5-a-side or 11-a-side, if you're dominating a game and the opposition gets a goal, you know, you feel the tension. You know, everyone's maybe a little bit more erratic. They're trying to play a perfect pass. And if you're the defensive team, you can often be a little bit galvanized by, okay, this siege mentality. We've got the goal. We can stick in even more. And I think Chelsea really struggled with both aspects of that.
Simon, I'm approaching middle age, if not there already, so the phrase low block does annoy me a little bit, not as much as generational talent or star boy, but I do find it quite irritating. But this is a problem that Chelsea haven't worked out how to deal with, right? As Luke says, how impactful, therefore, was it that Enzo Fernandez and Mikhailo Mudryk both pulled out of training late on Friday and therefore weren't available to play? Would Mudryk's pace have been something that could have unlocked the Brentford defence in a way that Chelsea didn't manage to?
Well, I'm not sure about that. After, I would say the game changed midway through the first half, actually, or certainly the last 15 minutes. It sort of suddenly Brentford switched on to the fact they were leaving Chelsea with far too much space. But in that 25, 30 minutes, that Chelsea team created enough to be one or two goals up. It wasn't just Noni Madueke's crossbar shot. I mean, Mark Cucurella's pass back to the goalkeeper when beautifully picked out by Cole Palmer, Raheem Sterling snatching at a shot inside the penalty area. Just three examples spring to mind. And then noticeably, as the first half, you could see the Brentford dugout getting more and more cross. Thomas Frank was tearing some of that wonderful barnet, sorry, hair. Barnet is another word for haircut, in case you're listening from abroad. I'm explaining some slang there. I know about hair slang because, it's all I can talk about. Anyway, you have missed me on this podcast. So, with 15 minutes to go that first half, they did start to retreat. Funny enough, it turned on the moment I said in the press box, right? So all this stuff about me being a moody old so-and-so. I said to the people around me, I said, this is one of the differences this season to last season. Chelsea playing better football and they're playing quicker. None of that sort of slow, slow, slow passing stuff. And it's almost like that's when I jinxed them, because suddenly they stopped passing it quickly. They started passing it really slowly. Like it was like 2022-23 vintage had suddenly reappeared in front of my eyes. And that always helps a defensive side. And Thomas Frank did say post-match that halftime was a good chance for him to get into them a bit more, into his players. And they came out. I mean, you could see at some points there was 11 men behind the ball, sort of in the last 35 yards of the pitch. So in answer to your question, as always, I've gone round the houses. But in that scenario, Mudryk is not got the pace to run into. So I'm not sure. It's hypothetical, isn't it? But I'm not sure him necessarily would have made the difference. He may have made the difference in the first half an hour when there was a lot more space and Brentford were giving them more space. Enzo, I think you could argue, would be more missed in the sense that his passing ability may have opened up things a bit more. But the amount of crosses that were going into the penalty area for a Didier Drogba or a Diego Costa, they're not there. Nicholas Jackson disappeared. I don't know where he went in the second half. I still think there's a missing ad out there. Have you seen this man? And perhaps that's part of the problem, that as much as we were upbeat about Nicholas Jackson when he joined and his pre-season form and all the encouragement, he now seems to have lost that bit of confidence and he's starting to hide in his shell a little bit.
Yeah, he got a bit of a pasting from Alan Shearer on Match of the Day too, on Jackson. Akiyom Bokwa, apologies if I got that wrong, says, how has Nicholas Jackson gone from looking like Drogba's regen at Villarreal to mimicking Drogba's start at Chelsea, showing promise to looking almost incompetent after an international break that he didn't participate in? It's mind-boggling. Hersha says, I appreciate Sterling gets a lot of unjust criticism, but is it really unfair to expect him to have even half of Salah's output given he's paid as much? He's been at the club for a while and has plenty of experience. And it's not that long ago that he had a part in every goal at Burnley, so maybe forgive him a bit of an off day on Saturday. And Damien says, midfielders are good, but there are no goals in them. Puts pressure on forwards, and we all know they can't handle that. That's an interesting point, Luke, I think, because we've kind of spoken a lot about Chelsea doing okay defensively this season, but I'm just looking through the list of goal scorers. Palmer's got a couple of penalties, but other than that, there aren't really many people chipping in. You know, I'm thinking of Conor Gallagher and Enzo Fernandez in particular. It needs somebody to start stepping up and weighing in with a few goals. Maybe that'll be Chukwuemeka when he comes back.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. Chukwuemeka, you know, looked very tidy to begin this season and obviously got that really, really nice goal against West Ham. In the game, he sustained that injury. And it's difficult because Conor Gallagher has showed that he can be a goal-scoring midfielder. I think he got 8 league goals while he was on loan at Crystal Palace playing as a sort of right-sided number 8, a position that he has played quite often this season for Chelsea, although he was in a slightly different role against Brentford. And Enzo Fernandez, of course, before his move to Chelsea, not maybe a natural goal scorer in his short career so far, but scored that wonderful goal for Argentina at the World Cup last year. So there are goals there. But as you say, I think it needs more contributions from midfield. And it's something that I think I said on the last pod, is that Chelsea are quite light in midfield. You know, you take Enzo Fernandez out of there and, you know, I think Pochettino, fair enough, didn't give Hugo Chukwu a start instead of Fernandez because they're completely different players and the young Frenchman's, you know, very inexperienced. at this level, but you know, beyond that, like, where is the depth? There's no, you know, midfielder of a different profile that can come in and inject that kind of goal scoring into Chelsea. And I think, you know, again, it's the youth thing, it's the inexperience thing. You know, you look at how Cole Palmer started his Chelsea career. He looks like a player that could end up contributing 10 goals, 10 assists regularly in seasons, but he's obviously not there yet. And I think, you know, Chelsea fans are probably sick of people and us saying it, but I think it's just patience with a lot of these players. It's just patience and learning how to play together.
Depth is a really important thing to touch on, I think, Simon, isn't it? Because you looked at the bench on Saturday and you see two goalies and two kids who've been called up from, should have been playing in the under-21s on Friday night, and you're thinking our best attacking option here is going to be Reece James. And that's problematic, and we're putting a lot of pressure on Christopher Nkunku, right? He was mentioned in the press conference on Friday. He's going to have to come in and hit the ground running, isn't he?
Yeah, good luck, Christopher. Chelsea season rests on your shoulders, or on your knee, in fact. When the subject of Nkunku was raised on Friday, and the fact that it's quite funny, Potts, he sort of raised everyone's hopes. He was really, really close, he said. And then when he's pressed, what do you mean, really, really close? He went, well, back after the November international break, maybe. So maybe in Argentina, really, really close means something different. But But it was still a positive. Here we go. This should be turned into a drinking game. At times I'll say the word positive. But that was a positive, right? Because when he was initially diagnosed, the club was sort of saying a minimum of 16 weeks. And I found the minimum word particularly concerning. And that was before he could return to training. So if he is back after the November international break, where there's some big games coming up, that is something to be positive about. But you're right, Matt, it's an awful lot of pressure to put on his shoulders. But when I asked Pochettino, what difference has his absence made, do you think, given that he was such a key part of your pre-season plans, you could see how you were lining things up. And he thinks that he would have got 8 to 10 goals by now. Again, it's obviously a bit of a, we'll never know if that's the case. But I think it does give you an insight into what Pochettino's thinking, that Nkunku would have made a sizable difference, not just in terms of goals, therefore, but in terms of their points tally, where they are in the league table. So I think even Pochettino himself is putting quite a bit of hope and optimism into Nkunku's return. But yeah, it just feels like it's more the same, doesn't it? You know, it's rolled in from last season, constant injuries and updates and setbacks, and the fact that they lost Enzo and Mudryk on Friday took the missing list to 9. I don't know about you guys, but did you feel that when it went down to 7, you sort of went, oh, it's only 7. Well, that's quite a low number. And you go, no, that's bonkers. And the only other thing I'll say, again, in answer to your question, is Pochettino does keep referencing that it will be so much better when I have a full fit squad to choose from, not because of the obvious, but because of the competition for places and how the levels can go up as a result of that. And I think we've sort of seen a hint of that with the way that, on the whole, Sterling, Mudryk, Palmer have all started to raise their games a little bit, with the fact they've all started scoring and doing quite well. So you can kind of see where he's coming from.
There's a cautionary tale, though, right, Luke, in terms of Nkunku, because here we are having rushed Armando Breuer back because Nicholas Jackson was suspended, and now Breuer's out with an injury to the other knee. And this is the problem that often happens, isn't it? If you get a serious knee injury, when you come back, you're quite likely to injure the other one or pick up little niggles. So it's not like they can just fling him straight back in and say, OK, you're starting every game now.
Yeah, Chelsea are obviously very well versed with rushing players back from injury, Reece James in particular springs to mind. And I just think, from my perspective, this season, not that it's a write-off, but you know, it's a transition season, perhaps, as they say. And I wouldn't want to see Christopher Nkunku in a Chelsea shirt before New Year, realistically. I'm very much of the opinion that you should save players, ease them back, not rush them, especially, as you say, with these kind of injuries that, you know, if you come back at maybe 85-90%, you put more pressure on other areas of your body. And then you end up with other little niggly injuries, you know, on the other leg or, you know, on the ankle because, you know, you're not quite there yet. So I think that's, for me, it's just let him be.
All right. A couple of other things from Brentford. Jesus Perez got sent off for entering the opposition's technical area. Neil Mope got booked as a sub, which was probably the highlight of the day, to be honest. And the referee sort of tried to disallow the second goal for some reason, all a bit odd. Mope, who hasn't scored in, I think, 34 games, decided to pass up the chance of slotting into an open net and square it to his teammate, which is sort of throwing some shade at Chelsea in some way, I'm sure. Simon, we've spoken the last couple of weeks about the home record and the fact that the fans have been pretty patient. I mean, it was virtually empty, wasn't it, at full time? Is this the first sign maybe of things turning? And does that put some pressure on Maurizio Pochettino?
Yes. I mean, I think the boos would have been louder if the second goal hadn't gone in. But that sort of really did lead to sort of like a half-empty ground by the time the final whistle did go off. Perhaps that's why it went to VAR. Perhaps they sort of went, let's give all the fans that want to leave early sort of a bit more time to get out before the final whistle goes. It was bizarre, wasn't it?
The ref spotted the ball up for a free kick, didn't he? He was making it up.
I mean, obviously they thought perhaps the pass to Mbeumo, maybe he was offside. That's the only thing. But it just seemed weird to even check it, I have to say. I was a bit bemused because it took me about a minute or two to realise what was going on. So hang on a minute, why is the ball over there? But yeah, there is a bit of pressure on Pochettino. There has to be. And again, this was my frustration after the Arsenal game. You know, the voice note I left, I know I got a bit of stick for it and the piece that I wrote afterwards. But it's because I knew what a psychological moment that was. I've covered this game long enough to know how these things can impact a squad and a mood around a club. The defeat on Saturday would still have been really disappointing, but beating Arsenal at home would have just bought Pochettino a bit more time. It would have sort of said, okay, here's where things are going. Now it's sort of, okay, it's more this home run, this sort of only beating Luton 5 points from six games. Of course, the home run also goes into last season as well. And I actually think the fans have been, given how bad it's been for over a year, I think they've been pretty good in the grand scheme of things. They've kind of have been pretty patient because you're talking about a fan base that has tasted the riches of, you know, seeing Champions Leagues and Premier League titles. And they haven't turned on the team too much, maybe more on social media and so on and so forth. But yeah, I don't think the pressure's just on Pochettino. I think a lot of the frustration may be aimed at the owners because, well, how many coaches now have tried to turn their Chelsea into a successful team? Perhaps the problems were a bit deeper, run a bit deeper than the coach. So maybe some of the frustration is also going to be aimed at the owners going forward if this continues.
Let's finish the Brentford game with some positivity from @CD11, who says, "Wish everyone would stop overreacting. We played some good football in the first half. See more of a plan from Poch in 10 games than any other manager since Conte." Well, Poch has got to come up with a plan to beat Blackburn in the League Cup. That game happens on Wednesday night. We'll look ahead to it next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Chelsea can reach the quarterfinals of a cup competition this week. That's a positive spin for you. All they've got to do is get past a bang average championship side at home. Sounds easy, doesn't it? On paper. Let's see if the reality matches that. I asked the chaps to pick a team. Prasanna, somewhat psychically, had sent us one unprompted. He's gone with Petrovic in goal, a back four of James, Disasi, Badiashile and Mattson, then Enzo, Ugochukwu and Matos in midfield with Madueke, Washington and Mudryk as the front three. Let's see how that chimes with the chaps. I think, Luke, that we're all going to put Georgia Petrovic in goal for this game. Am I right in thinking that that's who you've gone for, or are you sticking with Sanchez?
Yeah, that's where I'm at. I think it's, you know, I'd love to get a look at the new man and see what he can offer. I actually thought Robert Sanchez played really, really well against Brentford, made some good stops. And although there were a few heart and mouth moments with his distribution, I thought his passing, particularly in the first half, was excellent. So I actually don't think he needs the confidence builder of being in goal against a lower league opposition. And it's a good chance to see Petrovic.
Are you going the same way, Simon, or are we going to see Eddie Beach make his debut?
No, I'm going with Roger. I'm calling in Roger from now on. My joke is that he gives another chance to the opposition.
Very good. Luke won't get that, but it's a 90s dance hit. Okay, so you're not going with Petrovic?
No, because, and this is my theme of my team, no messing about. This competition is huge for Chelsea and for Pochettino. So I'd like to see Petrovic, but we haven't seen him so far. So I don't think making a change, and this obviously, despite what I wrote last week, I don't think now's the time for experimentation and for giving people a chance. It's all about players that have played consistently. And the one thing you can say about Sanchez is he has been sort of the regular goalkeeper. So I think you're taking risks if you're now, and people go, risks? What, against the championship side? I just think it's all about getting through to the next round. This League Cup is one of Chelsea's two chances of winning a trophy. And, you know, just imagine if things go wrong for Petrovic as well. So, yeah, I'm going Sanchez. And when I leave my voice note on Wednesday night, let's hope I don't eat my words if he plays and he has a shocker.
I put Petrovic in goal. Luke, I've gone for a back four of James, Disasi, Badiashile and Mattson. And the player that I'm most concerned about there is Mattson, because I thought he looked like a headless chicken when he came on at the weekend. And that's a sign of a young player who's been played all over the pitch except in his favoured position. So I'd love to see him play at left back. Are you sticking with four at the back? If so, who's in it?
Yeah, four at the back for me, Matt, and exactly the same four as you. Great chance to see Mattson in his natural position where he excelled for Burnley last year, and Badiashile hopefully getting some minutes under his belt after coming back from injury and being on the bench for the last couple of games.
Simon, you thinking similarly? Do you need Reece James to start this game, for example?
I have gone with Reece. I think he's pretty much my only, not surprising change, but given he's only had a couple of sub appearances. But I think I'm thinking Spurs a little bit as well. You kind of want Reece to get up to speed and hopefully a start, even if it's 60 minutes, you know, just get more minutes into his legs. But the rest of my back four is Disasi, Colwill, Cucurella, for the very same reason as I've just gone on rambling about.
All right, so we're all keeping Disasi in. He was a little bit shaky, I would say, on return on Saturday, but he's been okay other than that, I guess. My midfield three, Luke, is Ugochukwu, Gallagher and Madueke. Can you offer me any advance on that, or are you even changing the formation a bit?
I've gone for more of a 4-2-3-1. So I've just gone for a pivot of Ugochukwu and Caicedo.
Oh, okay. Nice. How about you, Simon?
Mine is reliant on Enzo being back. But let's just say he's fine, because Poch did say it was pretty minor. So it's sort of re-establishing reuniting rather that midfield of Caicedo, Fernandes and Gallagher.
Okay. Who's your three then, Luke?
I've gone for Madueke, Palmer and David Washington. And the one that I'm most worried about there is Cole Palmer, because he's racked up a lot of minutes so far since joining Chelsea. and having not played that consistently for Manchester City, and we've seen it before where a player does this and then their bodies aren't used to it and they pick up an injury. But I just think with the rest of the team that I've named, Blackburn being the opposition that they are, I think Palmer's creativity will be essential. And this is where we talk about the lack of depth. I'd love to play someone else there, but I'm not confident enough to play anyone else there.
All right. I'm fascinated you've gone for Washington in that three. So who does that mean you've got up front then? Is it Jackson to try and get some confidence in him?
Yeah, Jackson, and I'm assuming Breuer's not fit. But it's whoever, if Breuer's fit, I'd maybe give him a start. But yeah, Nicholas Jackson, just to try and get him some confidence.
Okay, I got Palmer in my team as well, Simon, but Luke's kind of talked me out of it there because he needs a bit of a rest, perhaps. I've also got Alex Matos in there just because. Give us the rest of your lineup, please.
Palmer, Jackson, and again, dependent on that he's recovered from his knock, Mudryk. So I'm going for, I've got my chips in. I've gone full in on the table. As I said, Chelsea need to win this game. Obviously, if Mudryk's not ready, because also I'm sort of thinking Monday, they've got that extra time gap. This is also another reason why I've gone pretty strong. There's plenty of time for players to recover here. But, if Mudryk's not ready, then obviously I'd still go with someone like Sterling. It really is that important, I think.
That's going to be interesting to see if Blackburn go full strength. There are some championship teams who like to rotate in this competition as well. They are 12th. They got beaten at home by Swansea at the weekend. They're only 4 points off the playoff places, though. It's the first time Chelsea played them since 2012. They've been at the Premier League for a long time. They have been banging the goals in this competition, though. They beat Walsall 4-3, won 8-0 at Harrogate, and then put 5 past Cardiff to get the tie against Chelsea. Luke, are they going to low block it? Give me a prediction for this. Are we looking at another day of struggle, or is this when the plan starts to come together?
I don't know. It's quite hard to call. I think, Blackburn will obviously sit back and try and catch Chelsea on the break. But, I hesitate to say this after saying it pre-Brentford. But I think Chelsea, basically, whatever team they put out, because the depth isn't really there, I think they should win and win comfortably. So I'm going to go with like a 2-0.
Okay, I think we'd take that, wouldn't we, Simon? This is quite an evocative fixture for Chelsea supporters of a certain age, or am I just thinking about that time when Brian Laudrup was really good at Ewood Park and Zola scoring against them?
Yeah, crikey, there. That's one of the all-time classic games, that one. It doesn't bring back many happy memories for me, I have to say, especially trips to Blackburn. Oh, my word. It's... The fact you mention it, it's one of those places that I'm trying to think if it's worse than Burnley, because obviously it's only just down the road, but very, very similar kind of all-day events. But yeah, you sort of forget that Blackburn have won as many Premier League titles as Liverpool. So that does bring back memory. They were the sort of, could you say the original Chelsea or the first Chelsea that suddenly... Money came from nowhere and they were able to spend their way into becoming a totally different outfit. And then it, unlike Chelsea, it just completely disappeared in the flash of an eye. But I hasten to add, I think Chelsea had a bit more of a foundation of success before Roman's money turned up.
All right. Well, whatever happens in the game, we will, of course, react to it on our Thursday pod. Just to say, listener, because you can't see this, but that little dig that we all enjoyed that Simon made against Liverpool was the happiest that I've seen Lucy since presumably she was bopping away at S Club 7 this weekend. Right, elsewhere in Chelsea news, it was a miserable weekend all round. The under-21s lucky to escape with a point from their game against Leicester on Friday night. They took the lead through Brody Hughes in the first half, but Leicester then bossed the game and deservedly equalised late on. The Dev squad in Premier League International Cup action on Tuesday night. The host, Dinamo Zagreb, you can see that on the Chelsea app. And the under-18s lost 4-3 at home to Spurs in the league a week after winning 4-3 away to Spurs in the Cup. So, I don't know. Something quite pleasing about that in an odd way, but not really, because it meant that nobody won for Chelsea this weekend because the women's team weren't playing because they had an international break. That is a very rambly way for me to finish the show, Simon. So help me out and tell me what you're writing about for Athletic subscribers to enjoy, please.
Well, I've only just got back from, it was a weird vacation. partly interrupted, as I think Ilium explained last week. But I've yet to speak to editors and stuff about what we're going to do. But there are things in the, it sounds like the cop-out line. There are things we're working on in the pipeline, but I can't talk about them yet.
Okay. Luke, do you have an opinion on Simon using vacation instead of holiday? Would you call your rubbish garbage instead of rubbish?
Hey, I have an American wife.
Yeah, it comes through occasionally, doesn't it? And you could see it there. I guess you maybe used to push your daughter in a stroller rather than a pram.
We of course, work for an American company as well. So
yeah, I've gone full in on the American life, you know. I'm going to move there soon. Take my upbeat nature across the Atlantic.
They'll love it. Luke, help me out here. Tell me there's something on The Athletic that we can use as a plug.
Lots of Ballon d'Or content, award ceremony tonight, men's and women's, and the Coppa trophy as well, which is for the under 21 players. So, you know, whether you're listening to this on Monday or later in the week, there'll be lots of reaction, live coverage, all that good stuff.
All right. Good luck to Sam Kerr. I don't think there are any of the Chelsea men's players nominated this year. I'm going to go out on a limb and make that guess without double checking it. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod is the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. We will be back on Thursday when we'll break down the thumping win against Blackburn in the League Cup and look ahead to that Monday matchup against Tottenham 2. Join us for that if you can. Until then, bye for now.
The Athletic.